818-985-5735. Please get this material. There's a lot of misinformation going on around about Fidel, about his contributions. And Fidel spoke at the Abyssinian Baptist Church in Harlem. The Reverend Butts is the president there. He received a very, very warm welcome from Harlem. The mayor was Rudolph Giuliani at the time. And we have exclusive material here for you. We are offering you today from the Pacifica Radio Archives, and at the $120 pledge, you will get the 3-CD set, exclusive material that you're not going to be able to get anywhere else. This is it. You're not going to be able to go on Blockbuster or wherever you go, Amazon, and get this material. This is exclusive to Pacifica. Brilliant 3-CD set. His speech in Harlem. Also, interview, in-depth interview that done exclusive to Pacifica. Also, we have tickets for a reception and a special screening of Fidel, The Untold Story. $35 pledge for a ticket, $50 pledge for a pair of tickets. There are going to be special guests there. The seats are limited. If you don't call and reserve your seat, likely you're not going to be able to get in. 818-985-5735. We're also offering up the Remembering Fidel Dollar a Day Pack, $365 level. If you want tickets, you'll need to put that on a credit card. But the tickets are also included in the Dollar a Day Pack, in which you will get Cuba, An African Odyssey. That DVD, if you try to get the real DVD online, you're going to be paying around close to $400, okay? It's a $150 pledge. It's part of our Dollar a Day Pack. So our Dollar a Day Pack just is worth Cuba, An African Odyssey. Also looking for Fidel, Oliver Stone's Looking for Fidel DVD. That's also in our Dollar a Day Pack. It's a $75 pledge on its own. Fidel Castro from the Pacifica Radio Archives, the 3-CD set, $120 level, and the special exclusive screening of Fidel, The Untold Story. There's going to be a wonderful reception with special guests, $50 pledge for a pair of tickets, $35 pledge for a ticket. I need 8 of you getting the Dollar a Day Pack. I need somebody calling and pledging in the memory of Fidel at the $1,000 level or the $500 level. I quickly now want to go on to another clip, hear more from Fidel about that incredible fight that the Cubans were involved in against apartheid in South Africa and for against colonialism. Let's go to that, hear Fidel talk about that right now.
And how many people are living a longer life? How much pain has been relieved? How much physical pain has been relieved? The same way illiteracy was eradicated in the first years of the revolution. And today we have the highest per capita. The highest number of teachers and professors per capita, and that among all the countries of the world. The same way we have the highest percentage of doctors per capita in the world. That is the country which is being accused of violating human rights. A country that has pursued a steady line of absolute and total respect for the physical integrity of its citizens. And the best evidence were the 3,000 prisoners we got in the Bay of Pigs. Not only one of them can say that he was ill-treated. Not one of them was killed. Not one of them was murdered even after when they were captured after battle. Not one of them was hurt. They came back as heroes. And some even changed after that. But no one could ever say that they were hit by one of our soldiers. That is our honor. That is our glory. That is our history. No matter the slanders, that is the truth.
Hey. He hablado que hemos donado nuestra sangre.
I have said that we have given our blood donations
para salvar vidas.
To save life in other countries.
De médicos, de maestros.
We have talked about teachers, about
hemos
doctors.
Hecho algo más que
but we have done something more than that.
Hemos derramado la sangre.
We have shed our blood.
Patriota.
We have shed our blood
para luchar contra
to fight
el colonialismo,
against colonialism and to defend the independence.
Más de 2,000 cubanos.
Over 2,000 Cubans
sacrificaron su vida en el cumplimiento de
shed their blood and gave their lives in these internationalist missions fighting colonialism and for the independence of the countries of Africa. But if there is something that makes us proud
y nos da la conciencia de que hemos cumplido
and makes us feel that we have discharged our duty to humanity,
fueron los 15 años que luchamos,
that is the 15 years
contra
that we
Sudáfrica,
fought against South Africa,
racismo,
against apartheid.
The number to call is 818-985-5735. This is rare material. It's a collector's item. Fidel, warm welcome in Harlem back in 1995 when Rudy Giuliani was the mayor who was so hostile against Fidel. We're offering up a 3-CD set exclusive. The pledge level is $120. That's $10 a month. I need 25 people calling, pledging at the $120 level in order to meet our goal. I've got to meet our goal of $3,000 for this hour. If not, I can no longer offer this Fidel material. I'm also offering up the Remembering Fidel dollar a day pack, and I encourage you to get the dollar a day pack. It includes Cuba and African Odyssey DVD. It includes Oliver Stone's Looking for Fidel DVD. It includes this exclusive Fidel speaking in Harlem, and then the in-depth interview with Fidel on a 3-CD set that's exclusive to Pacific. The pledge level for that is $120. Also in the dollar a day pack, you can get a pair of tickets. The pledge level is $50, a pair of tickets for the screening of Fidel, The Untold Story. It's a special Sojourner Truth KPFK screening. It's going to be at the Peace Center on Saturday, January the 14th. Reception at 4 o'clock, screening at 5 o'clock. If you want tickets, please put the part of your pledge for the tickets on a credit card. Okay, we're not going to be able to pay over time for those tickets. $35 for one, $50 for a pair. The number is 818-985-5735. So if you want to get a dollar a day pack, you can just deduct the pair of tickets, put that on a credit card. The rest of it you could pay over time. You'll work it out with the phone answerers. 818-985-5735. So for a dollar a day, you're going to be getting three DVDs because Cuba and African Odyssey, it's two DVDs on its own. To purchase it, the real film online, it's close to $400. You'll be getting the Looking for Fidel DVD. You'll be getting three CDs, so that's five items. And you get to either attend or gift to somebody a pair of tickets for the screening of Fidel and Untold Story. If the lines are busy, we will get to you. 818-985-5735. I just want to move quickly now to hear more from Fidel on that fight to end apartheid in South Africa. He's up against the Western powers. He's up against the South African army. And it was a tough, tough fight. Many, many Cubans were killed, lost their lives for Africa.
15 years.
Luchando.
For 15 years, we were there fighting apartheid.
Hasta el final.
Fighting racism till the very end.
¿Qué hacían con nosotros? Nos decían que nos bloqueaban.
What were they doing with us? They said that we had to be imposed a blockade.
Porque estábamos cumpliendo esa misión de ayuda allí.
And they were doing that, they said, because we were giving assistance to that country.
Luchando contra los
because we were fighting the South African racists.
Esa es una historia muy interesante.
But that is a very interesting story, you know.
Cual un día deberá, deberá
something that will one day have to be written.
Uno de los más horribles
one of the most awful systems of discrimination and racism was the one that existed there.
en aquel país.
In that country, in South Africa.
Decenas de años después del fin del fascismo.
Years after the end of fascism and Nazism.
Sin embargo,
that situation existed there.
Hoy no se habla mucho.
However, not much is talked today about that, you know.
Nosotros conocemos bien la historia.
We know that history very well. We know it very well.
A Sudáfrica no la bloqueaba.
South Africa was not blockaded.
No le impedían comprar alimentos y
South Africa was not prevented from purchasing food and medicines.
Y al país que luchaba heroicamente,
and the country that was heroically fighting against the racists,
no le vendían una medicina,
was not sold one medicine,
una aspirina,
one aspirin,
un citostate,
one citostat. For a cancer patient, that was the punishment.
Hoy todo el mundo es feliz.
Today everybody's happy.
Porque se acabó el apartheid.
Because the apartheid is finished.
Hoy todo el mundo es feliz.
Today everybody's happy.
Porque se produce la independencia de Namibia.
Because the independence of Namibia was attained.
Y dura fue la lucha.
But there was a tough struggle.
De namibiano.
By Namibians, Angolans,
Cubanos,
and Cubans. They had to fight very hard.
Para que ustedes tengan una idea, nuestras tropas,
for you to have an idea,
estaban cerca de la frontera.
Our troops were close to the South African border.
Un país poderoso,
a powerful
riquísimo.
Country, a very wealthy country, South Africa.
Nosotros a más de 10,000 kilómetros.
And we were over 10,000 kilometers away, I mean Cuba.
Aquella lucha.
We were still keeping up that fight 10,000 kilometers away from our territory.
Claro, aquello no era fácil.
Of course,
la
that was not an easy task.
Cada vez que los angolanos iniciaban alguna ofensiva,
every time the Angolans started an offensive,
intervenían los surafricanos.
The South Africans came over and fought them back. And we said to the Soviets,
que asesoraban allí en el
who were the advisors to the Angolan headquarters,
que esas ofensivas no
that those offensives
hacer.
Were wrong. They couldn't
si no
do that.
Prohibía
if
a los
they were not able to prevent the South Africans from attacking them, it was useless to conduct
no
those offensives.
Manera. Eso no se entendía.
But they did not pay attention. They did not understand that. Till there was a moment when a very serious crisis was created. A moment when the war was practically lost.
This is Boots Riley from The Coup. And whenever I'm running from the police, I got to find out where to go. I listen to Free Radio Santa Cruz.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. act or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences, Marshall. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
And yeah, songs with social significance and just chatter with social significance. That's what I'm trying to do here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, the stream of Free Radio. We have a kind of a double-edged sword here. We're getting the good side of the sword is it looks like we may be getting a transmitter site and going back on the air. I haven't heard the latest on that, but then again, I haven't heard anything negative either. It looks like a real possibility. The negative side is our studio, which we were able to find with the help of Food Not Bombs activists and took us so long, so many months to find, is apparently going to be coming to an end in mid-January. And so we need a new studio if we are to continue with, broadcasting from a studio. We've been able to broadcast at different times just kind of from the void, and we have been able to do that. We may be able to do that again, but it's really difficult for us. So those of you who are still regular fans of Free Radio, keep your eyes and ears open, because we need a place to plant our butts in a studio, which is completely legal, and then a chance to be the outlaws that you love us to be through putting up a transmitter in order to benefit the community, regardless of the unnecessary and punitive restrictions of the FCC, which we've been able to do without causing harm to anyone for the last 21 years, although we've had some pretty dry times. That looks like we hopefully don't have another period like that. If you want to help us out with this, give a call to call me on the Huff line. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, a group I work with, and my home phone. It's 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And you can also contact the collective at thefreakradio.org, where you may well be listening to this right now, unless you're listening to it on the Huff archives, where all these shows are also saved if you go to huffsantacruz.org. In any case, today is the 22nd of December. I will likely be in here on Christmas, broadcasting to all you jolly folks at home, toasting each other, or perhaps shivering outside. Whatever, wherever you happen to be, I generally pay little attention to holidays. Perhaps even announcing some of my own, although, I don't know. Well, in any case, I will be doing a show, I would think, on Sunday. It's the long show. Today's show got a bunch of stuff and some catching up to do with interviews that I've gotten in the last couple weeks. But particularly just sort of the latest update I heard only within the last hour was that the Freedom Sleepers Event 76, the one that happened Tuesday night and Wednesday morning, just yesterday, was busted by the police. People were given citations. One man was arrested and taken away in handcuffs. That was Monterey Max, who's a determined supporter of the Freedom Sleepers. The people were given tickets, and I'm getting this actually third hand, getting from someone who got it second hand. The police decided they were going to punish people for sleeping on the brick area, which is the entrance to the Santa Cruz City Hall courtyard. In past years, of course, this being the seat of government, it was considered a quite appropriate place for people to assemble, although, of course, everywhere in Santa Cruz it's illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night, unless you're indoors in a private residence or hotel, or if you are outside city limits on private property with the permission of the owner outside the no camping zones. There's really a pretty severe institutional, long-standing crackdown on homeless people, or at least the structure. Not just the structure has been in place. The practice has been in place for decades, treating poor people like trash or third or fourth class citizens and denying them the most basic of human rights, or at least certainly one of them, the right to sleep. In any case, one of the basic point of the Freedom Sleepers has been to maintain a continuing presence at City Hall once a week protesting this criminal conspiracy against the civil rights of poor people, colluded in by the city manager, the city attorney, the courts, the city council, and I don't know, the Parks and Rec Department, anybody else who cooperates with this attempt to menace the health and safety of poor people outside, particularly in winter. It's particularly grim. And there was also simultaneously busts up in Berkeley of the first they came for the homeless encampment, also known as the Poor Tour, which regular listeners or listeners of recent shows might remember Mike Zint and Mike Lee and Dan Daniel talking about as well, three activists from Berkeley. And hopefully we're going to have Dan on again to do some more updating on what's going on there. I'm going to probably be reading from the Berkeley Daily Planet some updates. Berkeley Daily Planet is an online and I guess also, I'm told, a hard copy publication. Well, I've never seen any hard copies recently. It used to be on many street corners in Berkeley, but that sort of ended 4 or 5 years ago. But it's a good place to catch updated stuff from liberal to radical tongues, so to speak. And so we're going to be doing a little of updating of the most recent stuff and also the homeless memorial. The reading of the names of the dead happened on, I guess it was on Tuesday morning. And I went out there, did some recording, actually gave a little speech. Jessica York broke her tradition of either ignoring me or excising me from the Santa Cruz urinal, or what she calls, actually what others call the Sentinel, which she writes for. And I got a couple paragraphs. I was amazed. But there wasn't much happening out there. You'll be able to hear my thoughts. And I did have a sort of a minor confrontation, and then a sort of an interesting interview with the head of the security forces out there, who is a former homeless guy, John, I think his first name is, and I interviewed him. Initially, he wanted to have me removed from the property for trespass, or he was threatening me with that, simply because I wouldn't check in at the guard station and show my ID. I'd walked in previously into the memorial, as had another 100 people and not shown their ID, but one of his underlings decided it was time for them to show their authority. And I said, nah, not going to do that. You know, call out the mafia or the militia or whatever. And they didn't. Anyway, it turned into an interesting interview, so I'll be playing a little bit of that, I think. And, of course, your phone calls are welcome. I'm hoping to get some phone calls from Berkeley as to what happened there yesterday morning when they did come for the homeless yet again and drove away the really nice-looking encampment that was on Adeline Street, if you know Berkeley, right next to the Berkeley Bowl sort of food court where there's some bathrooms available and their neighbors were supportive. And supposedly they'd elected a city council majority headed by Jesse Arguin, or if I have his name right, who was sympathetic. But for some reason, the previous liberal supporter, Chris Worthington, according to activist Carol Denny, backed off. And the attempt to officially instruct the city manager to instruct the police, that's the kind of chain of command I guess they have there, similar to ours, I think, to back off and stop arresting people or ticketing people or seizing their tents or destroying their blankets and taking their their signs, and their other life-sustaining gear, particularly since there's no legal shelter for them in Berkeley, as there isn't in Santa Cruz, but to no avail so far. So the liberals are either ducking for cover or, I don't know, going tisk-tisk but doing nothing. That is to say the liberals who are in political positions, the politician liberals, sort of like our new politician liberals or our old politician liberals on Santa Cruz City Council, who I haven't seen stepping up to do anything around the arrests of people and the ticketing of people here in Santa Cruz for sleeping outside, Sandy Brown and Chris Crone. Crone has said he will be on free radio, and I'm expecting to have him either a week from today or possibly Sunday after next. This Sunday is a Christmas Eve. I'm not sure what's going to be cooking. So while you take all that in, why don't we have a little bit of some of that old, reliable Ryan Harvey. Here's a tune called Stronger Than You Think.
You might be stronger than you think. Might be stronger than you think. Just try to break your fear so you can think clear, because you might be stronger than you think. Well, the war's exploding all over the news. The war's exploding all over the news. There's a black hole in Iraq, so many never coming back. The war's exploding all over the news. Who's making all these plans to go to war? Who's paying their wages and what do they do it for? Well, they don't ask or make demands, they just take it from our hands. And that's why half the country is poor. There'll be no one left alive when they're through. No one left alive when they're through. 600,000 dead this war, and it's escalating more. And there'll be no one left alive when they're through. Well, where are they getting all these giant weapons? And who's building all of them? Well, we build them with our hands in the factories of Uncle Scam, 'cause we're trying to feed our kids and pay our rent. And rent is rising up through the roof. Rent is rising up through the roof. Oh, how'd it come to be the price of property? 'Cause rent is rising up through the roof. Well, someone's setting the scales in this town, and they've seized the land and they made themselves a crown. But these condos wouldn't stand if it wasn't for our hands. But they say the neighborhood's much safer now. Another prison springing up next door. Another prison springing up next door. There's twice as many doing time and a steady increase in crime. And another prison springing up next door. Well, why don't these statistics make sense? More cops, more jails, more crime. It's pointless. But with every prison planned, it's putting profits in the hands of the ACA private prison business. Oh, how can so many be ruled by so few? How can so many be ruled by so few? If we all stood tall, this whole system would fall. Oh, how can so many be ruled by so few? Well, we play their game and we build our own divisions. 'Cause we trust them or they threaten us with prison. But you could spoil all their plans if you just used your hands to take your power back. Just try it, 'cause you might be stronger than you think. Might be stronger than you think. First they'll laugh and they'll attack, but it can fall apart so fast. 'Cause you might be stronger than you think.
Ryan Harvey, Ryan Harvey, Stronger Than You Think. You can find it online, and it's a six-year-old song, apparently. At least it was uploaded in 2010, according to what the YouTube says. Be playing some more of Ryan Harvey's stuff. That one's a little much sort of like a talking polemic set to music, but that's okay, because I agree with what he says, pretty much. You're tuned to the stream of freakradio.org. Actually, it's free radio at freakradio.org. And you can read our schedule there. Hopefully it'll be updated if it isn't already. You can apply for membership if you'd like to do a show of your own. You can get in touch with us if you have some concerns or complaints or just questions through that website. And if you've got questions you want to address to me about this show, you can call me on the Huff line, as mentioned before, at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, 423-HUFF. The call-in line here at the studio, in case you want to report anything that's happening out there, or react to anything I'm saying, or add to it, or give a different point of view, is 427-3772, 427-3772. And I'm really apologize to Eagle, one of the activists who was at the Freedom Sleep Out 76 on Tuesday night and Wednesday morning, because he left me a message that I didn't pick up until actually just about an hour and a half ago. And I'm going to play it now. It's a recorded message which he wanted me to, I presume he wants me to pass on, and he certainly wants a call back. I've tried to reach him, and I've invited him to call the studio, and he probably won't get it in time, but I'm going to play that message now. I'm having a technical difficulty. Don't go away. Technical difficulty is about to be solved, folks, so hang in there.
Robert, Mr. Norris, this is Eagle, Darren Coast, and it's 530-321-24.
We'll try to leave his number out of this.
Robert. Mr. Norris, this is Eagle, Darren Coast, and it's 530-321-2427. Hey, give me a call tonight. It's Wednesday night. Need to talk to you. Hey, my fiance got a ticket this morning at Freedom Sleepers. Early in the morning, they're rousing us at City Hall. Two people got tickets. Max got put in handcuffs. Tickets, Max got put in handcuffs, he got released, caught a little scene, but got released, a few people got tickets, I was the only one that didn't get a ticket, I think me and one other person didn't get a ticket, everybody else had a ticket for sneaking on the bricks, not under the eaves, but on the bricks there in the front. Hey, give me a call, I need to talk to you, it's very important, I got some more information for you for the street, alright? I've got a couple of people's testimony I need to talk to you about. All right, I want to talk to you about the radio station on Sunday morning. All right, bud, have a good night. Give me a call back as soon as you can.
And that was Eagle calling in, I guess, probably yesterday. I, for some reason, didn't get this message till today, and my apologies to him, as I said before. I also spoke with Zav, who is doing some tenant organizing and who's also been doing a lot of work with the Freedom Sleepers, though he's gone vacation for a while. He'll be out of town. And he got a secondhand report from activist Pat Colby. And that, and who knows? Could that be something about this? Who knows? Let's see what's cooking on the phone here. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Turn off your radio or turn down your computer so you don't get feedback. I'm hearing some strange things here. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Hi.
And who is this?
This is Brittany.
This is who? I'm hearing lots of tones but no voice. Still can't hear you. Can you hear me? Okay. Looks like a bad line there. So the update I got from Zav, who's an activist, as I said, working in a number of fields, but really a mainstay for quite a while for the Freedom Sleepers every Tuesday night in Santa Cruz. He advised me that pretty much the same kind of story I was getting from Eagle in that brief message, which is namely that there were numerous tickets given out to people without any warning who were sleeping on the bricks in the area in front of the City Hall courtyard, as mentioned before. This is the area that you come upon if you're walking from the library just into City Hall and heading for the City Council meeting. Let's continue this conversation in a moment. Hi. You're still...
Hi, Robert.
I think I can hear you now.
Can you? Okay. Great.
Yeah, you're pretty clear.
Raylan from Marysville.
Hey, so you're from the infamous Marysville. Where are you, inside or outside, Raylan?
I'm outside. I'm in my tent right now.
And how's the weather up there?
Cold, very cold.
Wow. And
how about down there?
It's cold for us, but I think that's probably a little different than for you, you know.
Yeah.
Like about 38 right now.
Well,
yeah, probably about 38.
You know, it's actually gotten down there into the 30s here too, strangely enough. We've had no expansion of shelter as a consequence of that. It has to be raining or below freezing. It's ridiculous. And even then, you know, it only serves less than 10% of the homeless folks here. What's been happening up there? Have your poverty pimps been providing any shelter for anybody? What's going on up there?
Well, the only shelter they have is the 14 Forward, which is... a lack of services now, I guess.
You need to be 14 standstill.
Yeah, 14 standstill is what we're calling it. But, no, it's been really cold up here, and everybody is, like, they're in the alleys, they're in the church steps, they're behind dumpsters, they're in bushes, and we didn't have that problem before. We never had that problem here before. And it's just they did the demolition of the other encampments, and everybody moved to where we are now, where Brian and I are at now. It's called the jungle. And now there's people that won't come over here and refuse to come here, and now they're all walking about town. And we never had that problem before with the homeless. We always had a place to go until they bulldozed our stuff up.
Tell me, Erlen, how big is Marysville?
11,670 people.
And how many homeless folks, Brian, would you say there
are? Approximately 400, 300.
And what's the...
Then we have the other side of the river, which is Yuba City, and there's about another 400 maybe there.
Yeah, and there's 65,000 there.
Yeah, and there's 65,000 in Yuba City and probably about 400 or 500 homeless over there.
So all together, 75,000 people, probably 1,000 homeless.
Yeah, probably about 1,000 homeless out of 75 people.
Well, I know you've been talking about organizing folks there, and that's I've always heard, and it's been my experience from talking to other folks on the ground, that's really hard to do. Have you had any success in getting people together for a union of the homeless or anything of that kind?
Well, we were pulling a camp meeting together, but then we had an accident down here, so everybody kind of just stayed in. So now I'm going to try to do that tomorrow during the daytime where it's a little warmer.
We're pretty much all here at the same spot, so we just got to step out, and everybody's congregated here in about a nine-acre lot, I guess. There's about 9 acres here on the spread and about 227 stick figures. I count them like, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then cross them. It's about 227 on about 9 acres.
227 people, you mean?
Yeah.
And how many are folks pretty much in tents, or are they outside? What's the story there?
There's motorhomes, trailers, tents, lean-tos. Some people are just in the trees. There's one guy just on the other side of the levee, and he's got his dogs, and he's just in the trees. And, you know, it's pretty bad. We didn't have it this bad up here until they did the demolition of the other encampment.
And them spending $250,000, and still they've got the same amount of problem as they had 6 months ago, starting on June 15th with the first encampment derailment. They spent approximately $250,000 and still got the same amount of homeless.
You mean you spent $250,000 to derail and demolish the encampments?
Yes. Yes, correct.
Yes.
So are they claiming that they are holding people's property, or are they just destroying it?
No. What's going on? I've been working diligently on trying to get a case together, and I'm up to a tort now, but nobody's wanting to take responsibility of any action doing. Hiring a demolition team, H&H Trenching, to specifically Hollywood, but nobody's wanting to take credit for any of the four things. The county's putting off on the city. The city's putting off on the county, but the money was let from the water agency to the county by directive of the city for the enforcement, because the city couldn't get anything to a judge, and a judge wouldn't award them any eviction papers for us. So they had to go to a code enforcement, which they did it illegal too. They gave us less than 24 hours. They didn't give us no due process in court or anything. They just slammed us.
Well, let me ask you this. What was I thinking? I guess you're talking about them passing the buck back and forth, but what about those who are resisting this? Is anybody, you know, are people preparing to do any kind of mutual protection, or is there any planning, or are people just kind of, you know, demoralized, or both? What's going on?
Yeah, this go-around after four places in Camas have been ran over, this go-around here is the last one, the last of the custard stand, and these guys are going to set the place on fire so that they don't steal their stuff and destroy it. They're gonna put up, because there's only a gate they can get in, and it's about a 6 foot, 8 foot wide gate, so 10 people can, stand in front of that gate, and they'd have to do something other than that to get into this place. So, it's a little bit better of an area that you can get, that's secluded off. You know what I mean? There's only a certain area that they can get in here, and these people here are like me. I'm ready to put it up, but I didn't want to get arrested last time, and that's what I was up against. Either get arrested or stand aside.
So when do you suspect this demolition is going to happen?
It'll come after we're having our homeless, the 16th and the 17th of February. They will do it after that, and I figure it's approximately probably somewhere in the mid-March they'll probably do it.
And why do you say that?
Because last year when they served an eviction paper, it was on March 28th, and it seems like it's in the middle of the month they've demolished all five encampments.
It was always on the, like, the 7th.
Yeah, 7th month of each month, yeah.
Each time they did it.
Do you have any internal sources in the city government that actually can alert you to when this is going to happen, or do you pretty much have to kind of...
We went to a meeting last 2 weeks ago, and we had the police commissioner of the detectives. And he was the one that specifically told us that they weren't going to do it until March.
Right. Well, I don't know if you can trust the police commissioner. I'm really wondering if you have anybody, you know, like a lower-level person who doesn't necessarily come out publicly and talk to you. But
nobody.
No deep throats.
Yeah, nobody. They're just going to do what they did. They're just going to knock on your door. They're going to put up a couple of pamphlets, a couple of pieces of paper, and they're going to bring in the team. And they're going to bid the team out like they did last time, too. It'll be a closed bid, and somebody will bid for the job, and they'll come in and do it just like they did.
Have you had any connection with activists in other cities? Any success with, you know, any kind of communications going on?
Just not really.
There's really no activists anywhere, really.
Yeah, I don't even think that we have any in this area up here. I'm not even sure. But I'll tell you what, if there sure is, I sure could.
I mean, we put it out.
Yeah.
We put it out, but we never get anything back, so.
And
yeah, we're kind of like dumb to this kind of, because we've never had to do nothing like this where we have to fight for our little spots, you know?
I didn't know that homelessness was going to be a career. If I would have knew it was going to be a career instead of adventure, I might have looked at it a little different.
Well, let me ask you this. You know that Caltrans is the subject of a lawsuit by a number of attorneys and homeless plaintiffs in the Bay Area. Have you considered getting in touch with them and trying to get some assistance or at least some connection with them?
Yes, I have. And matter of fact, Brian had got hold of, what's that friend? He had got hold of a lawyer here just today, so we're waiting on an email back from them.
Okay.
Because Caltrans seems to be statewide, but here it's not so much the case. Caltrans is not wanting to fess up to any of the equipment being borrowed by the city or the county to do the encampment. There, it was kind of like a quiet law, I guess you could say, a quiet crunch, I guess if you want to look at it like that.
How many would you say, how many activists, are there any activists in the group of people in your encampment who want to, you know, go set up another camp?
Yeah,
what they're doing in Berkeley, for instance, is they just got busted. They got busted on Wednesday morning at the so-called Poor Tour campground, the first they came for the homeless, which I recommend you check out on the Facebook as a page, because they got some great stuff there that's describing what's going on. But they then have moved. I guess they've moved to another location near City Hall, and this is like the 12th or 13th time they've moved. Are you guys making any preparation to move in the event that you're busted, or are you going to just sort of leave it and wait? What are your plans in that regard?
We're not really sure. I'm going to have a camp meeting, like I said, and I'm going to tell everybody this is what's going on. I'm going to tell them what's going on and tell them the things that we can do, you know, because I'm aware of a lot of things that we can do, protesting, whatnot. And see who all wants to get involved, because I'm not going to put myself out there and do all the work and them just kick back, because they got to step up, because I need some power behind me. I just need them to stand behind me, and I'll do the speaking. They just need to stand behind me.
And these guys are doing it so bad, Robert. They're doing it in a way that you can expect them not to do it legal. I went in just the other day and I asked for any expenditures that the city had acquired in the past 5 years towards any of the homeless issues. And you know what they told me? That there was 2 parking meters at the end of town that they had specified for the homeless fund, and that it was given to a place they call here called the Depot, which is a family crisis center for, like, families and stuff. But that's the only expenditure that they said they had acquired. But I'm not expecting them to do anything legal like they did otherwise. No documents, because the judge ain't going to issue them, so it's going to be just a hit.
Yeah, you know, I'm not really, I don't pay much stock in what the city does, although I think it's good that you're trying to follow it, Brian. I guess the question I have is, you know, do you think there is a small group of people, maybe a larger group of people around which, you know, kind of a core of people, do you guys intend to move to some other place? I mean, are you spotting out other sites to go to, things of that sort?
No.
Matter of fact, we went to our place where we just got out twice now, and we've been harassed by the code enforcement both times. They got us on TPS or something, because every time we've been there within 10 minutes, they came there and they told us they're going to arrest us next time, put us in jail if we've caught trespassing on city-owned property.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's nice if their jails can hold, how many people are there? 227?
Yeah.
I mean, of course.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, but, see, Robert, this is the thing. They don't want homelessness in their county, in their city. They don't want us here at all. And they have already stated that if we don't do their little 14-4-word lack of service down here.
Why don't you explain what that is, Rylan?
14-4-word is their tiny houses, they're for shelter, and they're supposed to have these services, these agencies all around, be helping these people get on their feet,
get registration,
get the houses,
get their vehicles, whatever they need to get out,
helping them with warrants, whatever their need is.
Right.
So are these tiny houses currently available for occupation?
Oh, yeah, they've been,
full.
Yeah, they're full, and that's been...
How many people are being served?
none's been served correctly that's been there. They've all had to leave, or they've just left out of there because of some personal stuff, like things missing in the place.
Let me ask you this. How many tiny houses are there for how many people if they want to go in?
20. And it holds two per unit. There's 20 houses. And, like, there was a girl here today, and she said, my time's going to be up soon. She goes, but I'm not leaving because they have not even... get their promises.
So this is for a limited period of time for even the 40 people who get into the 20 tiny houses?
Yeah, and half of them have left. Some of them have got houses or jobs, but some of them, the promises that the 14 forward gave them, they haven't come through with nothing. And the agencies are supposed to come there every day and talk to these people and be helping them get houses or medical or whatever it is. And they're not doing that.
So what about the issue of, I mean, that's fine for the 40 people maybe or get in or don't get in or want to stay or don't stay or want to get services or don't get services in spite of their wanting them. But what about the other, 180 people that are outside? Have you got, do you have porta potties? Do you have any kind of sanitation situation? How's it going for the rest of you folks?
They have the 20 buildings, two people per building.
So I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about your encampment, the jungle. That's where the people are. They're not in the tiny houses. That's a much smaller number of people, right?
And the waiting list is, 92 people right now,
not including the 220.
So my question then is, are there any services being provided to the 227 people that are in the jungle?
It won't be provided until the 2 days before they come in and they run you over.
Possibly a week or so.
Maybe a week.
Well, I'm talking about things like, clean water, porta potties or toilets, trash pickups, that sort of thing.
A caravanning you across towns to another place like they did the horseshoe people. They caravan them like a bunch of chickens.
I'm asking you, are any of these services being provided now to people in the jungle?
No. Not to none of us down here, no.
And are
only if you go through the 14 forward, and then that's very iffy.
And you're talking about the 14 forward only refers to 40 people, it sounds like.
Yes.
That's it. Exactly.
So my question is, are the people in the jungle encampment generally being left alone now, or are the police stalking around in there? What's going on now?
The police come down in through here, but only if there's been a problem, like in town, they come down here and just start, picking on it.
They know.
I gotcha. And how are people managing to live together? I mean, how's the jungle proceeding in terms of, is it a community? How's it operating now?
It hasn't been easy because, like the other people from the other encampments that got demolished, they were there for purpose because they didn't all get along.
Wow.
So now they've moved us all in one spot, and it's terrible.
The northwest end of town.
Yeah, it's
terrible.
It's terrible.
And the sleep zone that they have offered has still no restrooms or garbages, and it looks exactly like what they kicked everybody.
So Brian, tell me, what is the sleep dome?
Pardon me?
What is the sleep dome?
A sleep zone is a place that the city has designated as a place so that you can sleep, because the law is that they can't punish you for sleeping. So they dug out these two mud holes in this field that's right outside the jungle. They put seven red poles around it, and they call it
bathroom.
And I call it the sleep zone, and there's no bathroom, no garbage, but you can sleep mud in A zone for one night, and then you got to pick up your tent and move to B zone, and they're only 50 yards away from each other. And then you pick it up on Tuesday, and then you go back to the other zone on Wednesday.
And how many people are actually sleeping there every night?
None.
It's a mud hole right now.
Not a one.
There's a mud. It's just mud. It's mud right now.
Has anybody taken pictures of this and written about this?
Yeah, it's been out on YouTube. It's on YouTube.
So tell people who are listening on the radio where they can view this fine mud hole sleep dome area.
You can view this fine mud hole sleep dome on Yuba County Homeless, Raylan Butcher or Brian Brown. It has about 8 videos on there, and that's what you'll see, the red zone. You'll see what I'm talking about.
Well, sounds pretty grim and pretty muddy, but you guys hopefully are indoor, or at least you're in tent, right? Or you're in your vehicle right now.
Tents, vehicles, gunny sacks, lean-to.
But some of us that are in tents right now, Robert, like Brian and myself, we lost everything at our last camp. So I'm in a little tiny, tiny tent, and I am used to a big tent and a nice camp. Now,
I don't have
any. I'm in. I'd have my two dogs. Thank God they have a doghouse. Yeah. And I'm in a, how big is this tent, Brian?
8 by 2.
Well, let me ask you, Raylan, have you considered making a list of all the property you've lost and also going around tent to tent, vehicle to vehicle, gunny sack to gunny sack, getting a list from people of all the property they've lost?
Yes, yes. That's why I'm continuing with my my push towards getting my stuff back, because they stole my stuff. They defrauded.
Right. But I mean, have you been getting the information from other people in a sort of a systematic way of what they themselves have lost?
Now, yeah, they're all doing.
They're all the ones that want to jump in our wagon.
Are posting all their property.
Posting their property as of now. The ones that already lost their stuff, they have videos that they're sending me, and they've already like marked down everything that they have.
You know what's really terrible too? They're not even checking for like propane tanks for people in the houses. They're just running them over, and they're not checking for any type of dynamite. There could be all kinds of stuff out there, and they don't even care. They did 300 tons. They said out of Hollywood, and 200 tons out of Horseshoe.
So we recently had a homeless memorial here, which was sort of a, I don't want to say it was a joke, but it was their sort of ritualistic thing they do every year, commemorating the homeless dead. How many people would you say have died in the last year in your area who are homeless?
I just had a guy that I've known for a lot of years. He just passed away. We found him dead in his trailer.
And there's been three or four that just disappeared.
Yeah, there's been some that's disappeared. There's some been found in the slough. Yeah, there's been a good little handful.
Yeah.
But the young man that just died, his name is Billy Sprague, and we found him in his trailer, and he had an infection, and the hospital here just treated him, just washed it up and sent him back out the door.
We're battling, yeah.
And he didn't, you know, he said, no, and they knew that the infection was set in so bad he didn't stay. He was not going to get their treatment. Like, they just treat us just like it's all bad at the hospital here.
Yeah.
And so he died in his trailer. We found him. And now we're having a service for him on the 27th of December.
Yeah, we're having a lot of stressed out people.
And people are pretty stressed out because of the way that the hospital has been treating them. When they go in there, they get the treatment. And I'm sure, I've been there, and I've been one of them that gives them nurses hell. But it's like, you know, they're doing the same thing as us. They're pushing our buttons just. Well, and the treatment we get at the hospital is just uncalled for.
And how many deaths would you estimate you had in the last year?
How many deaths? Deaths
in the last year?
How many people have died who are outside?
Three.
Okay, Brian's count more.
I would say probably four you could count, and probably three that was found in the river or the slough up, you know, that just... For some odd reason, they all say they were drownings in a slough, but I'd say probably seven people altogether in the past year.
So that's actually a pretty low death rate for homeless people. Maybe it's because you're not in an urban area. It could be that people are dying faster.
Yeah, well, we've only got 11,000 people, and 1,000 of them are homeless.
Yeah, but see, now, just since we've had the other encampments bulldozed over, we've had, two deaths?
Yeah.
Two deaths. Since then, and that's only been 80-something days ago.
Right.
And two people have already died, and one man died of stress. He was so stressed out that he died of stress. It was terrible, and I'm looking at the doctor, and I'm going, what, you know? And he's saying, yes, he was so stressed. And
yeah, well, I see that, you know, Aurelian, that you've written to Street Spirit Newspaper, which is a paper that you can find online. This people in the audience, in case they don't know this, at thestreetspirit.org. And I'm hoping that, you know, you can write get in touch with the editor and write something about Marysville for the paper, which I think is still continuing to publish into the next year, and it's distributed throughout the Bay Area, not so much up in your area. I think I'm going to pretty much leave it here, but I'm going to give you two the last word. We've been talking with Ray Lynn Butcher and Brian. What's your last name, Brian?
Brown.
Sorry, Brian Brown.
Brian Brown, related to No Browns Around.
Well, there you are. Don't Brown knows people there, Brown. So, anything you want to add before I move on?
Just that, I don't know, I pray for all homeless all across California, all across the United States and the world, actually. I'm just like, if anybody's got any suggestions that we might meet up here, I'm really, you can, you know, reach me and let me know. Reach out to me too, because I'm sitting up here just dumbfounded, and my people are like throwing questions at me that I can't even answer.
So, Raylan, how can people reach you?
They can reach me on my email. Yeah, on my email, or I have a blog. But on my email, it's ethean.rb@gmail.com.
One more time.
ethean.rb@gmail.com.
Thanks. Any thoughts from you, Brian, before we go?
No, but I'd like to thank you and your listeners for hanging in there. And, you know, I want to tell them from the bottom of my heart, and the people here are counting on me and Raylan to hang in there for as best and as long as we can. And that's what we're doing. We're sitting here right now, a place where we don't need to be, but it's a place where we have to be. And these are our people. So just hang in there and let everybody know that I'm trying to stand up tall, and we'll get to that paper, and hopefully we'll just keep tuned on that if you want to really see what's going on and know what's going on. And I'd say that the understanding that communication is the best weapon we have out there, if we can get it out there.
Thank you, Brian. I'm going to leave it there, and we'll talk again.
Thanks, Robert. Okay, Robert, thank you, and I thank everyone listening.
Thanks, Ray.
Have a Merry Christmas.
Odie,
Merry
ho,
Christmas
ho.
To all.
Bye-bye. Yeah, that was Raylan Butcher and Brian Brown up in Marysville. You're tuned to the stream of free radio at freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, and this is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. Here's a little something to listen to.
What you're looking at live from the tip of Manhattan is a new face of war. You've heard talk about the terrorism, the war on terrorism, the war being waged by terrorism. Take a good look. This is what it's about. We've said for years that terrorism is soon to be coming to America. It began coming here at the time in the 1990s, the first time in the World Trade Center.
United 93, I'm sent for a bomb on board. Go ahead. Check your mouth and you think you're going to send a transmission.
Was it worth it? You should start to ask, because the answer's lying in the recent past. Remember how it went? It was out of the blue. It came when the planes came flying through. The towers fell, it was marketed well. They threw the lessons out, kept the shell, it was fear. That was the main attraction, they scare near to death. They're afraid to take action. Was it worth it? Was it worth it? Was it worth it? War was in their sights, and we had just learned firsthand what it's like. Was it worth it? Where were we? Some were watching it all on headline news, the shock and awe. The night vision flashes, Baghdad sky, the bright green glare. We were hypnotized and we fell asleep, or our brains were clogged. Now we're jumping through Iraq like a big dumb dog. That's us, the richest country on the earth, fulfilling its role as a murderer. And it's dangerous to act like this, because when the cycle repeats, it comes back to us. Was it worth it? Was it worth it? Was it worth it? The torture trial, they caught him red-handed. They're still in denial. Was it worth it? them obey. There's a lot of bullshit, security cameras, terror-level color schemes, fear propaganda, stories on the news, a perpetual plan, some sleeper cell from Afghanistan. Was it worth it? Was it worth it? Was it worth it? The contract bids, the pictures of the kids with the missing limbs. Was it worth it? Burning homes, the bursting steel, the hype of stories, the bathroom deal. Everybody's against it, who's been paying attention, except a few still trapped in that sixth dimension. Where it's profit first, kill or be killed. Kill or be less rich, or just kill for a power trip. Call it peace, they'll love it. Was it worth it? Was it worth it? Was it worth it? The facts denied, the daily car bomb suicide. Was it worth it?
Live from the tip of Manhattan is a new face of war.
I'm trying to reach Dan McMullen, and I'm seeming to have a little trouble here as I continue to fumble with the phone, but I'm going to fumble on here and hopefully get through to him.
Take a good look. This is what it's about.
And we are ringing him, so maybe we'll get through to him. Dan, of course, is an activist in Berkeley who has been closely following, if not pitching a tent with, the First They Came for the Homeless folks. And hopefully we will get him to answer the phone.
Hi, you've reached Commissioner Dan McMullen at the Human Welfare and Community Action Commission. Also with the Disabled People.
I think we'll try again, and maybe we can actually get through, because I did reach him a moment ago. So let's see if I can do that. How are we doing here?
After the tone, simply hang up.
Uh-oh. Well, I'm not going to give up trying, but I think what I'll do is, while I'm trying, we'll listen to a little something from our own Freedom Sleepers. This is from a week ago, actually more like a week and a half ago, at Freedom Sleep Out 75. This was the time of the last Santa Cruz City Council meeting. And, well, here's some of what was said then outside the City Council meeting.
So here we are at Freedom Sleep Out 75. Looks like we got some folks under the eaves because it's going to be a rainy night. Council is still meeting with the coronation ceremony. And across the street in the Civic, lights are on because they're preparing to provide food for the celebration of the incoming council members. I'm talking with
Audie.
And Audie, you're here under an umbrella, but you say that and there's a lone soup tureen there. Have people been fed yet?
Yes, that's almost done. So, yeah, he had a good soup for everybody.
That's
nice
good.
Hot soup.
Yeah, I hear that. Hey, how you doing?
Hey, Joseph. Joey.
And so you say that...
Last Wednesday, after the protest, I was standing here. The Rangers came and the policemen were here. And they were just saying some bad crap about the street people. And they asked me particularly, why are you cleaning up after them?
To which you replied,
I'm a volunteer. Uh-huh. And, you know, and then they were starting to talk with Zav and, who's the other guy, Maxwell, about stuff. And they were just harassing. And there was hardly anybody here, but their tone changed. It's more harassment now.
But what time was it that this happened?
About 8:30, 9 in the morning, last Wednesday morning.
And how many cops?
Two rangers, I don't know, three cops maybe.
And what was the response of Max and Zav to this harassment as you describe it?
Well, Zav was very straightforward. They were asking all about him. He says, yeah, he's a graduate of UCSC. He says, I have a job. I'm housed. And they were just trying to, they're trying to stop this completely is what they want to do. But it was just, it was more harassment than anything. They didn't give out any tickets, but it was just harassment, and Zav is just pissed off. He's going to take a...
And that was a report from Audie on December 12th from the previous Freedom Sleep Out 75, actually 74. And on the line with me, I think we have Dan McMullen. Are you there, Deadly Dan?
I am here.
All right. So, Dan, you're no longer in your tent. I take it you're back in a warmer spot at the moment.
Can you believe they took my Kelting? I love that tent.
And this was all yesterday morning when the Berkeley police came and walled everybody off, including reporters and lawyers and supporters and everybody else.
Yeah, man, this has gone even further than even the one before the one I told you about where they walled off two blocks and took everybody's stuff. This time, I was at the camp. And I checked everything was fine. I thought, okay, I go home, do some catch up on the emails and stuff, and then I come back. And I kind of fell asleep. And then, like, I didn't get anything on the phone at all. And I was just like, wow. Because I was kind of worried about a raid because they, like, served us with papers a couple days before. And some people were like, I don't think they would do it on Christmas. It's getting too close to Christmas. And so I was kind of thinking, you know, maybe that could happen, and, you know, I kind of believe in Santa Claus sometimes, but, it's about 10 o'clock, and I look down, and it says on my computer, which I fell asleep with in my lap, I look at it, and it says, we are being raided, and, like, this has happened, like, hours before, but I was asleep and didn't see it, and then, so, I tried to call, and, like, every time I call, the number I call would come up and just drop. And then, like, I call again, come up and just drop. And then I would call other people, and it would just come up and drop. And I'd go outside in front of the house, and it would just come up and drop. And then, you know, I got dressed real quick, and I went up there, and the whole way up there, and I'm still trying to call. And my phone is, like, zapped somehow. I don't know what the hell. But then all the people that were involved in this thing, all their phones went off. And they couldn't call out or get calls in. And so that was, I don't know if that was just a really, really, really huge coincidence or some kind of crazy new thing that our police force bought when the last time they went to the big police force shopping center they have every year called Operation Urban Shield.
Well, let me ask you, Dan, how many people did you actually talk to who told you their phone service had been cut?
There were about, you know, it was all about one, two, three, four, about five people that I can actually say I know for sure.
And so when you got up to the Adeline, the former encampment at the Berkeley Bowl, the poor tour, or the former poor tour, I understand they moved it to, back to City Hall area again? Is that the latest 13th
right.
move?
Right. So I didn't even go to the old site because I just figured, somebody said, we're going to the Civic Center. So I just made a right, left up there on MLK, and I looked down, and there they were. So I went down there. And, everybody's like on the sidewalk. They had nothing. Nothing. Some people didn't even have shirts on. I was like, what? They were like, took people's clothes, all their clothes, all their bedding. We created two warming centers with stoves and we had two warming centers and then we had a potty, all everything. Man, it was a little village and it was completely self-contained.
Yeah, I remember, Dan. Can you hold for just a moment?
Yeah.
Hang on.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
That's still you. Oh, yeah, I thought we had an incoming call here. So we're talking with Dan McMullen of Berkeley. This is the 13th time this is really kind of self-supporting encampment, which has gotten no support from the Berkeley City Council, as you described so vividly, either, I guess it was last show or the show before. Carol Denny has written for her a rather scathing denunciation of Chris Worthington, the council member who apparently failed or actually derailed the attempt to require the city manager to stop the raids on the encampment. Is that accurate?
Yeah, you know, it's really weird to, like, be at odds with, like, people like Chris Worthington because, you know, just like a year ago, that was, like, the one person you could count on. It's like everybody, like, flipped roles or something.
But when they get into power, they tend to change. That's what I tend to find. We had the situation here 20 years ago where we elected three council members. We had a good council member, we thought, a woman named Catherine Byers. And she, you know, she wanted to end the sleeping ban and all kinds of things. And all she needed was a majority. Well, we elected three people, or someone elected them. I don't know who I voted for. I don't think I endorsed them. But Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar, those are the three guys here. One of them is run again, Crone. And they, two of them tried to hang tough for at least briefly and to support ending the sleeping ban, at least delaying it for the winter here in Santa Cruz. But Catherine Byers turned the other way. And essentially, you know, because she was more interested in what her West Side neighbors were. That's the interpretation of some of us. Than in the needs and even her previous promises about, or at least the indications she was giving. So I'm not surprised with Worthington, who I've known him for 20 years on and off, and I'm. You know, I mean, I've had some positive things to say about him, but there also seemed to be a sort of an attitude around him, which is kind of, I'm the council member and you're the lowly constituent, and better remember that. You know, I don't know. I'm not sure if.
No, there's.
That's
fair. You know, I try to be as nice as possible about people.
Yeah, I don't. I don't bother being. I'll be nice about people. I'll be nice about people, but not about politicians ever. Thank you.
But when I got my first apartment, I got off the street. He was my very first guest that came to my house.
Well, that's nice of you, Dan. I forgive you for that.
And I like to, you know, sometimes some things just stick with you about a person, and I really did appreciate that. And, but I mean, I've given a lot of leeway for that one thing over the years. I was really shocked that he was, so adamant against, creating a legal campground for people. People are doing it all over the country. We're like behind times in Berkeley, in this respect. And it's, you know,
do you have any idea why, although I don't know, I want to waste my time psychoanalyzing Berkeley Council member Chris Worthington, but tell me what you think.
For some reason, they don't get it about shelters, okay? The thing about shelters is, like, you know, you're in this big room, and especially this shelter they're talking about, it's an auditorium full of cots. And, you know, when you're a homeless people are not like a tribe or a family or a type of person. It's a circumstance you're in. It's the homeless circumstance. You're not a homeless person. You're a person in the homeless circumstance. And And so they think all homeless people are the same, and like we all want to live together in a big room for some reason. And actually, it's like in a, one of these shelters, you might go there because it's so cold, and if you didn't go inside, you would die. But there's so many, there's people in that room that you would rather die than be next to, because they're just so far out of who you are as a person. And, you know, because there's all kinds of different people in the world. And, you know, we have different people in our own circles in our life. And you know, like my neighbor has different circle and I have a different circle. We might live like next door to each other, but they don't, they're not in a bed next to me. I don't think that would work. And that doesn't work, you know, in like a shelter either, because like there's just so many different things going on. You know, there's homeless people that don't use drugs and don't drink, and there's some that do, and there's some that do this but not that, and there's some that, you know, this is their philosophy, and others, that's their philosophy, and these people just don't get that, even though that's how they are in their own life. And, you know, I try to tell them, you know, that's what's going on, and it just doesn't seem to sink in. I go, look, you know, you just can't throw a bunch of different, you know, just because it says you call them homeless, doesn't make them like a one group. They're just homeless people. That's their circumstance. They're different people, and they're not all going to want to be together. And some people would rather live in a tent where, you know, you're in a tent, and even though you don't like the guy that's in the tent sitting with you that much, at least he's in a separate tent, and you're not, he's not laying next to you, and you have your own privacy. And, like, you know, when you scratch your ear, 40 people don't go, ooh! You know, it's just a weird feeling to be.
I think I got your point, Dan. When you went down to the former site of this, the encampment that was busted, the first they came for the homeless encampment, and then I understand some had moved. Are many people preparing to go to the new site, as far as you know, or have they gone?
Yeah. So, I just left. And what was fun, one thing that was really, I thought was really telling and interesting, and I'm kind of proud of about the camp, was, you know, I got there like at, right after they were all done, after I checked and made sure the people at the city hall were okay for a minute, I went over there to look at the camp, and they put one of those plastic fences that they're putting around every area that we've been in on the poor tour, and now they're all over Berkeley, like, cordoned off areas where we were once camped. And there were two bags of trash that they got out of that camp that they said was full of trash and was a nuisance and everything. But we took such good care of that camp that they had a hard time filling two trash bags full.
So what are people going to do now? What are people going to do now, Dan? What do you think the next step is, if there is one?
Well, you know, we're camping again. We're at a different location, and I think we're probably going to move to another location from that location real soon for a special Christmas location. And Chris, which I'm looking forward to.
Perhaps Chris Worthington's house.
So, you know, things are still going on. You know, it's not going to stop until we at least get something positive done out of all of this hard work. It's been really hard work for a lot of people, and we've kind of cracked a little bit and started yelling at each other. But, you know, we'll get over that. We always do. And, you know, get back on, you know, because it's really, the work is the most important thing. And saving lives is the most important thing, and helping people is the most important thing, and the hell with the egos and the hurt feelings, and you know, get over it, and let's move on.
And sounds like, I mean, that's something struggling with yourself, I would imagine, right now.
I am, yeah, you know, because it's not, you know, it's not easy when you put a lot of work in and people criticize you. And but they're just expressing their feelings because they're disappointed and through hell. And I you got to step back from yourself for a minute and don't let your ego get out of control too. And then just say, okay, see your brothers and sisters and have compassion, because they're going through it. It's really hard to go through that. And I just remember what it was like for me. And it's really support. And,
well, you know, what it sounds like what you're talking about, Dan, is, you know, conflicts that develop between people in the campground about what different strategies that come up, things of that sort.
Yeah, things of that sort. And, you know, we have a little, people donate a little money, and then they're like, well, why don't you get down here real quick and pay this and do this, and you know, and you're doing a million things at once. And then when people realize what's really going on, then they go, oh, sorry. And then it's over. But for the minute, you get really angry because you're like, don't, nobody really knows like what I do except for my wife, because she's plus every 5 seconds.
Well, plus the free radio listeners who have heard you talk about it.
Typing. And you know, so she doesn't, she knows what I'm going through, but no other individuals out there really know what's going on with me, because they just see me when I'm there, and then I'm going somewhere else to do a meeting, or I'm doing something else, and it's all, and then trying to pull it all together.
Dan, let me read you this. You've probably seen it, but it's an article by Carol Denny, which begins with a letter from Chris Worthington, the council member, who apparently dropped the ball, not only dropped it on everybody else's head, when there was an expectation that there was going to be, at the council meeting, a real demand that the city manager change direction. Here's what Denny quotes Chris Worthington as actually saying. Our wonderful mayor, Arguin, whose name I can never pronounce, has announced ending homeless as his first priority. At our first regular council meeting, we made enormous progress. We doubled the number of winter storm shelter beds. We extended shelter hours to 12 hours per night. We increased daytime warming centers. We started work to create our first navigation center. We rescinded the anti-homeless two-foot law adopted last year. We reinstated funding cut in June to the Berkeley Drop-In Center. We reinstated funding cut in June to Youth Spirit Artworks. All of these are being implemented immediately. We also appointed a four-person committee to come up with additional solutions. They will explore possible encampment locations and policies, and will also look at property recovery practices and policy. One encampment keeps refusing to accept any services. That's, of course, the encampment we're talking about that they destroyed yesterday.
Yeah.
Even though their whole group could be inside all day and all night. They pick campsites that break multiple laws and create health and safety problems, but insist they have a right to camp, even though they are causing numerous problems. Some of them are verbally attacking Mayor Arguin. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And our wonderful city manager, who are both working very hard and coming up with faster solutions than I've ever seen any government do. I have fought fiercely to defend homeless people from repressive politicians and laws. I have been arrested protesting anti-homeless laws from Frank Jordan and Gavin Newsom. I fought against Measures N and O in Berkeley and against Measure S. I am still trying to work with this group, despite their outrageous, insulting, and false statements. Please do not accept their false portrayal of the situation in Berkeley. We have accomplished so much more and are working on so much more. Chris Worthington, Berkeley City Council Member, District 7. So why are you lying so much about poor Chris, Dan?
I'm glad I didn't read that. I'm really glad I didn't read that the other day, because I probably would have strangled him when I saw him. That is the most outrageous thing I've ever heard in my entire life. You know, first of all, you know, he talks about getting arrested with this person and that person and blah, blah, blah. And what I say to that is, where's that guy now? Where did he go? And then also the warming centers and the warming centers and the rain shelter. The rain shelter is just temporary and it only opens when it's raining. And the warming shelter only open when the temperature goes down to 38 degrees. And You can't be inside all day and all night. You have to leave there at 6 o'clock in the morning and get back out there in the cold. And you got to leave your stuff outside somewhere where it's going to probably get stolen. And then you got to go in and stay with every maniac in Berkeley that's dumb enough to go to one of those frickin' places in the first place, which is like a sign that you don't want to be there. And I mean, just go on and on about everything you read, and still have a lot to say about it tomorrow morning. That is the most ridiculous letter I've ever heard, and coming from that guy, it's just like, you know, astonishing. I don't, you know, like when you said, like, your one, your one city council person switched over on you, and she was worried about her constituents on the west side or wherever she's from. And here, they don't give a fuck about, sorry for the word, about the constituents. It's about what the real estate people that paid for their elections want to do. And sure enough, when we had that city council meeting, everybody, hundreds of people came out in favor of what we wanted to do, and hundreds of people, and one real estate asshole and one neo-Nazi came out, and that's who supported Chris, and that's who supported Erigine. And Erigine, he keeps saying, oh, well, you know, I tried my best. I went over there and I begged the city manager not to raid the camp, but she insisted that she has to do it because of complaints. You know, give me a freaking break, because all he would have had to do is tell them, you know what, it is our express desire of this city council that you do not raid those camps one time in that whole meeting, and I could have walked out of there with at least some dignity and knowing that they care about going in the right direction. But he couldn't even do that.
And I think the point is, Dan, that because there was no such statement, your city manager decided she was in a fine position to continue the policies she'd taken before.
Right, because nothing had changed. Nothing changed from the time she raided us before. And, when I went over to the city hall yesterday, I had a wonderful moment that I just want to share with you. At first I got there and I was pretty hot with seeing the people with no shirts and everything. So I was kind of yelling a little bit, and then I kind of calmed down. I went over and I got a request for information from the police department, because I want to find what kind of spy gear they've been buying lately that took my phone off. And I came over, I told the cops, you know, I see you guys all the time on the street, you know, I give you a wave every now and then, and a hey, and, you know, I treat you with respect, and, you know, it's not like I hate you or anything like that, but you really got to think, you know, every guy in Nuremberg, every one of those Nazis stood up there and said, I was only following orders, okay, but all the people they massacred and murdered and killed and tortured, and even on the gallows, when they were putting the ropes around their necks, they were still saying, I was only following the orders. And then, you know, Heil Hitler, and fleeing through the trap door. And you might want to think about that when these people are ordering you out to do this to people, because it's bad, and it's bad for your soul, and you should. And a couple of cops were actually shaking their heads, like, you know, not in a little way, so their other officers couldn't see it. So, like, through a couple of them. So I turned around, say, haven't said my say, and then there's one of the city workers, and he got the big stake that they start driving in the ground to put up that plastic fencing that they put around every area that they kick us out of, and so they're starting to do another one, and he goes down, blink, 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 hits a line of shit water, and a whole huge plume goes up in the air of this, you know, black water. Is it smell? I started jumping up and down. Oil, oil, Berkeley is struck oil. And then everybody joined in with me. We just had this tremendous moment of laughter and fun and dancing. And I just it was just a great moment. And so true that, you know, here they are, same old Berkeley, feeding us shit, hitting us with shit again, and now they're digging into it. And I just love that.
Well, here what Denny writes in response to what I just read from Chris Worthington is, the continuing raids on a group known as First They Came for the Homeless, a years-long protest of the unfair treatment of the poorest of the poor, would have stopped at the last city council meeting but for one vote. And the most peculiar behavior that night wasn't from any of the people with mental challenges attending that, I presume she means conservative council members, the December 13th meeting. It was from Chris Worthington, this District 7 rep, who introduced a handwritten proposal, which you talked about last meeting.
He came in there
at the last minute, which did not mention the raids. Did not second a motion from District 2 Representative Cheryl Davila regarding the raids, and most obviously had nothing to say about the raids. So it doesn't come as a surprise to some that Worthington issued the above statement, attempting to distinguish First They Came for the Homeless as other than the deserving poor. The same same tactic former Mayor Tom Bates was fond of using. It seems the more precisely one points at the inadequacy of the current system and the more you organize with others to amplify your voice and improve your safety, the more you are ushered into the protest group where even a chalked message by one person can be used to violate the rights of an entire group. When I was visiting Berkeley, I'd heard that it happened right before I arrived on the previous place where they were encamped. Our community is blessed, generous, and baffled at having to watch the blankets and survival gear they donate to First They Came for the Homeless and others more discreetly living on the streets, consistently thrown into city trash trucks in quasi-military pre-dawn raids on people we all ought to know or just trying to illustrate a problem. They are not the problem. 30 years under Mayors Bates and Hancock of replacing low-income housing with lucrative luxury units has obvious consequences which need powerful, visible illustration, especially in winter. Councilmember Worthington needs reminding that Berkeley is tired of the criminalization of poverty and selective targeting of its most vocal opponents. It's expensive. It's impractical. It's, of course, immoral in one of the cities with the biggest income gaps in the nation. But it's also making a very capable, sensible city council rep look like a fool. Well, she's like you. I think she's you don't want to get too close to these people, I'm afraid. You know, I warn you, Dan. The same is true with the police.
Everything she says right there is right on.
Yep.
Completely. Berkeley, you know, I've never had people so concerned about what's going on with homeless people before. And so many people come up and like, hey, we made you guys some soup. And, you know, we're really pulling for you guys. You're doing a great job out here. And you know, they're so warm and generous and encouraging. And, you know, I really appreciate that from folks. And, you know, it helps me, you know, it strengthens a little to move on. But then to hear somebody like Chris Worthington, you know, call us, you know, like we don't want to do things that we're just completely unreasonable because we've given you a gold coin and you're saying it's not shiny enough. And, you know, it's just, and that's such a lie, you know. What you've given me is a piece of tinfoil that's colored gold, and it ain't worth shit, okay? And you know it, and I know it, so quit the fucking bullshit.
Is there any excuse?
Are not going to fix anything.
Is there any excuse that they're giving any specific? Is there any pretext they're using? I mean, I know in 1998 they used the health pretext to clear out the Eureka jetty, and I know that in you know, years before that in Santa Cruz they used the rains to clear out the homeless open air shelter, which was an encampment that people had.
Oh, I love that. I remember when you guys had that. That was great.
And then their Camp Paradise was cleared out. The river the river flooded. And, I mean, they always have excuses, but I guess to hell with their excuses and to hell with wondering about Chris Worthington's spiritual salvation or any other bullshit of that kind. But what are the people who are doing this and their supporters? What do you propose for something for a next move? And I know you're just one person, but go ahead.
I'm just one person, but you know what? One person can be a voice. One person can be a inspiration. One point person can be a leader. One person can be an organizer. There's a lot of one person can be.
Sure.
And I'm going to be that person.
Well, what do you suggest they do next? Do you have any thoughts on the strategy?
Is that they are, this has been a tenacious group. Every time they come at us, we just pop up again. And, you know, it's a whack-a-mole with the city of Berkeley. And the poor tour has not even gone to the best neighborhoods yet. We've got some great neighborhoods ahead of us on this poor tour. So as we progress into some of the finer places in Berkeley, we're going to see how they react to that. And, what the citizenry thinks of what they're doing with homeless people. What they hate the most is that when you pass us by, you know, if the homelessness in Berkeley is like people walk along And they see maybe one person got a sign. Okay, he's homeless. And then another person just sitting there. Well, maybe that person's just maybe not homeless. Maybe they just like to sit on the sidewalk or they're waiting for a Uber car, you know. And they keep going. And they see like four or five people. Then they turn the block and they see another two people. Then they get in their car and they drive away. And then, you know, and this goes on a million times a day with all kinds of different people, and no one gets an idea of the big picture of homelessness. But when you see all of us in our tent city and you drive by, you go, Jesus Christ, this homeless problem is a lot worse than I thought it was. And Berkeley keeps saying they spend more money than anybody else on homelessness. Where does that money go? Look at these people right here. People start asking questions. And that's been happening a lot, and that's what they're afraid of. That's the real fear. They're not afraid of, you know, germs in a camp or liability or trash or rats or whatever excuse they use, which isn't there in the first place. What they're afraid of is scrutiny and questions, and that's what they're getting, a lot of them. And you get a lot of people calling up and saying, you know, you need to help those people out there. It's getting ridiculous. And that's the problem, because what they've been doing for a long time is spending money, paying themselves. Millions and millions of dollars are spent not on homelessness, but on the salaries of all these jokers that aren't doing crap. And I know it, and they know it, and everybody else is starting to know it. And the only person that was talking, like you talked about Berkeley Food and Housing. Berkeley Food and Housing imports people from all, you know, people are always saying, if we provide services, then people will come from all over the place and come to our town, and then they'll move in, and then we'll have even more homeless people. But Berkeley Food and Housing actually contracts with Albany and other cities around here to take care of their homeless. When they kicked the people out of the Albany landfill, Berkeley Food and Housing took like $2 million to process those people and then drop them off on the sidewalk in Berkeley. So that's where the homeless, the people, where are these new homeless people coming from? And then whoever, and the person that was there to defend Berkeley Food and Housing is the hub, by the way, the people that we are protesting that aren't doing anything. That's Berkeley Food and Housing, okay? And the person that was defending them is the other big sucker of money in Berkeley that does nothing called Options Recovery. And they are supposed to be a drug and alcohol program, but really what they do is they take somebody that's been busted for like having a beer or, you know, doing any kind of normal thing that someone else would never get in trouble for if they were like old enough, 21 years old, and could drink a beer or whatever they're doing. And then they get them on probation. And then every time they're like an hour late to their options recovery meeting, they throw them back in jail, back and forth, back and forth. And then all these people end up terrified. They go to city council meetings and say how great options recovery is just to curry service favor with these people so they don't get thrown back in jail. And it just makes me puke. I don't know how many times I've gone to like Oakland or San Francisco and seen a friend that I've known for years and I haven't seen him for a while. And I go, dude, what are you doing down here? And, you know, the worst part of Oakland, he's going, oh, you know, options recovery. They were putting me in and out of jail so many times that I just had to get out of there. And that they contract with parolees all over the county and bring them to Berkeley, and then they get dropped off on our streets and they get housing from Berkeley Food and Housing instead of the people that are on the streets. And then also contracted the state of California to take all the murderers that are paroled and deal with that have substance abuse things on their parole thing, and they take them and they get the housing that Berkeley people should be getting. So, you know, give me a break, man. I know what they're up to. I see what they're up to. And when people come to our encampment and they go, why is this problem happening? And I start telling them what's happening, those people up there start shaking in their boots because they know that their little ivory tower is starting to rock a little bit, and that's why they send the cops out to beat the crap out of us at 4 o'clock in the morning and leave us shirtless in the rain.
Let's leave it there, Dan. I'm gonna actually read some more from the Berkeley Daily Planet, but I'm gonna let you get back to what you're doing, and I will hope to get another report from you on Sunday about your latest location, perhaps in front of the mayor's house, perhaps. You never can tell.
Oh, that should be good.
I hear there's some beautiful places in the Berkeley Hills too, I understand.
I can't wait for this one. This is gonna be the best one ever.
Well, thank you, Dan. And people want to reach you. They can find you where and how?
Dan, Disabled People Outside Project on Facebook, or Dan McMullen on Facebook.
Thank you, Dan.
And that's M-C-M-U-L-L-A-N with the A-A-N. And you guys can come up there, and you can, I always keep what's going on and new pictures up and everything. And you can also donate a little bit of money. Disabled People Outside Project at GoFundMe.
Thanks. Appreciate it. We'll talk again.
You're welcome. Thanks. Thank you, Bo.
All right.
Good to see you.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And we actually have another call coming in. Let's see who's on the line. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello. We just missed them. If you're listening on the radio or on the stream, I should say, to us at Free Radio, freakradio.org, call back, 427-3772, and I'll try to catch your call in time. I didn't quite catch you. So, let's continue hearing some more from our own Freedom Sleep Out, which was also busted around the same time. Actually, it was around this time. It was at 4:30 in the morning is when the police came and ticketed people for the act of lying on the bricks rather than on the colder sidewalk. I'm not sure actually if the bricks are colder or less cold, but they're an area where people have been laying. Of course, as I pointed out in case of my three tickets that I got for the same crime of being in a, quote, park after dark, that is to say at City Hall with a protest sign trying to raise an issue that the City Council refuses to deal with, even in the deadly depths of winter. They're using these phony laws, these bullshit trespass laws that have nothing to do with real trespass, because this is public property and no one else is using it and no one's being blocked and no one's being hurt, except, of course, the reputations of the politicians, as Dan McMullen has pointed out so clearly. Let's see if we can hear a little more of... I think we were listening to Audie at Freedom Sleep Out 75 a week ago.
Break, so...
So he came and kind of told you this and then took off to the...
Yeah, he just came in. He's going to come back tomorrow, but he doesn't want to be here tonight, so...
Understandably.
Well, it's, you know, it's oppressive. I'm feeling the oppression in this town, and it's a little bit too much for me also. So after a while, I feel I need to escape. I'm pissed off, so just about the energy here, so...
I hear you. Anything happened tonight? How long have you been here this evening?
No, just short time. So nothing really. Nothing's happening right now. It's just real quiet, as you can see.
And Joey, you're here as well. How long you been here tonight?
I've been sitting out here just sitting back smoking.
I got you.
I like your hat.
And it's Laura Tucker, of all people. Welcome. So it looks like the
I like your hat.
Yes, me Thank too. You. Notables are still notable.
I got to get one of those.
Are in the council chambers. I guess I'm going to meander on in there and see what they're doing.
Okay, should I hand these off to you now?
Where did
what
you
are they?
That?
Clippings.
Clippings. What do I owe you?
71.
And let's go into the last city council meeting of the year and hear a little of what went on in there.
The way the city council does.
So we
and their meetings are closed, and yet they tell the city council what...
And actually what this is a critic outside city council talking about what's going on or not going on around City Hall.
The way the city council does.
So we
their meetings are closed, and yet they tell the city council what to do.
So you were saying that it's not the city council so much that disturbs you, but other groups.
The Business Owners Association, the Homeowners Association, they tell the city council what to do, and then they have the city council meeting, and the people try to tell the city council what they want, and instead the city council tells the people what the business association and the homeowners association wants.
Well, what's an example?
That's what we get.
What's an example of that?
What's an example of that? Why do we have such high business fees in this town, so much that it drives all the small businesses out? Why do we pay the police $200,000 a year when they retire, when the average nationwide is only $120 to $140? Well, I just heard it's because no police want to work here, so you have to pay them extra to entice them to come to a place that's dangerous.
I mean, all those homeless people sitting on the sidewalk, that sort of thing?
Oh, those people aren't homeless. They just don't have any place to live.
Well, the unhoused, if you will. Robert, anything you want to say for Free Radio?
No. I'm just waiting for the concessions.
Waiting for the Civic Auditorium to open. I got you. Thank you. So I'm talking with
Pat Colby.
And before we hear Pat, and I hope I haven't played this before, I'll mention again, every election year in the past, the Santa Cruz City Council fets its new council members, celebrates them by not only having these lengthy speeches at City Hall, outgoing and incoming council members give, and, of course, ignoring the real situation of poor people outside who actually need some attention from the so-called representatives of the city. But they then open up a kind of a wine and dine, schmooze and munch activity over across the street in the Civic Auditorium, which is open to the public, not because they really want it to be open to the public, but because they're required to do so under the Brown Act. Although former Mayor Matthews is now just Council Member Matthews, I suppose that's a small grace we have here, didn't put it on the agenda this year, although she was supposed to, and it was the city staff wondered why she didn't. A couple years ago, when the council had one of their meetings, they didn't do it in the Civic Auditorium. They did it at a private restaurant, I think in the Palomar. And I organized a huff protest outside where we walked into this meeting, even though it was in a closed room. And first they tried to ignore us, and then eventually they called the police to remove us, not because we were doing anything. We were just standing there with signs about homelessness, you know. But it was making them uncomfortable, no doubt. And Sergeant Bush was he was intimidating people into leaving. And I told him, you can arrest me if you want. I think it's a Brown Act requirement that we'd be allowed to be in this situation. You have seven council members all sitting at the same table. Don't claim it's an event that they're all attending and doing nothing political. It's obviously a situation where the public has the right to be there to hear what's going on. But they're trying to increasingly privatize and secretize what goes on generally, I think. In any case, let's hear some more from the evening of the 13th.
And, Pat, you say the police are going psycho. What do you mean by that?
Well, they're always psycho, but they're really stepping it up to try to run the homeless out of Santa Cruz. Last night we saw at the Greek church, there was people that had permission to stay there. And because the priest didn't say, and this is good until, so-and-so date, the police would not accept the letter they had. But they had cleaned up and had permission to stay there, and there was two officers there.
You were a witness?
Oh, yeah. We were watching it from our car, and then they ran them out of here. Mm-hmm. Everywhere you looked.
You're pointing to the library bench area?
Sorry. Yes, I'm pointing
outside the main library.
Yeah, they've been running them out of everywhere. Mm-hmm. They're not waiting for the rangers to do the dirty work or the first alarm. It's actually, we were going, like, last night there was probably so many drunks that almost hit things that got home to their nice, warm houses, while all these homeless were, like, made to move along. Darren told me three times he was made to move.
How many people would you estimate were approached by the police?
Well, from what I'm getting, there was at least, 40 homeless from different areas that were...
But what you saw was...
What we saw was about 12.
And over at the Greek church, or both the
Greek church, the library, and then I was...
You jumped out with your camera and began taking pictures immediately, of course.
Was the point. Hey, our camera doesn't pick up at night. Don't tell the police officers.
Certainly not.
But we're
how many police?
New,
how many? How many?
My new night vision.
How many?
We just got it in the.
How many police were involved?
It looked like there was like three or four doubled up in the car. And the night before, there was like these screaming people leaving, young people leaving the bars, screaming. That I finally had to say, "Where the hell are you people? They're getting in their cars and they're going 60 down Church Street." You know, one almost skidded out as it didn't stop at the stop sign.
Well, they're eager to get out of town.
Well, they're just eager to get to their nice warm beds. But, I mean, if we're going to really bust real criminals, then we go after people that drink so much that they
You, of course, will be making a fuller report at tomorrow's Huff meeting.
Assuming
you don't sleep through it, of course.
Oh, I won't sleep through it. I just didn't know if it was going to be there.
Well, it will be, in spite of all conflict, internal opposition, and grumbliness.
Yeah, so they just did a full-on assault last night. We saw it.
So you were saying. So we've been talking with...
Pat Colby.
Thank you, Pat.
That's our tax dollars at work. I'm sorry, that's our tax dollars at waste.
And we didn't have a Huff meeting yesterday, which is the normal time, actually. We've had Huff meetings regularly for... I would say 20 years, but I don't really recall the early 90s how regularly Huff met. But I think we met quite frequently, and certainly for the last 10 or 15 years, longer. We've since Huff was founded, I think in 1989, actually was founded, and there were some prior groups. There were sort of Huffish groups that I was a part of, too. Coalition End, the Camping Ban, Bag Ladies Revolt. Other groups from the late 80s. We've been pretty good about having regular meetings, and I still thought it would be good to take a Wednesday off for various reasons, one of them being holiday, the other being my own uncertainty as to what direction we want to be taking. But there will be a meeting next Wednesday. Huff will be coming back. And we meet at the Sub Rosa every Wednesday at 11 o'clock for folks who are interested in these issues. But it's not coming to the meetings that makes any difference, really, although actually it's helpful, I think, for us all to get together. But it's what we do between times, keeping our eyes on the police, videoing or audioing or just keeping, you know, a record of what goes down out there and speaking up when... abusive behavior happens. So, for instance, if you go online to the Santa Cruz Indie Media website, which I regularly post on, but which I think is still not allowing Steve Argue to post on. I haven't gotten any good new information on that, what exactly they don't like about his posts. But if you go to Santa Cruz Indie Media, it's at indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, you'll find, for example, that tomorrow at noon there is a protest at the corner of Pacific and Cooper to together to end solitary confinement statewide, 12 to 2. At 11:30, they're going to set up. At 12 noon, they'll have signs and reach outreach to passersby. And then from 12:30 to 2, there'll be a rally, a speak out, readers' theater. I'm reading from Santa Cruz Indie Media. Take action, write letters to end sleep deprivation, torture of people in California solitary units. And this is a very important issue. And to me, of course, I'm glad that this is being... that Willow Katz is the woman who's actively organizing this, and others, Steve Blach is another activist who's involved in this. They're there every week, or I should say, I think it's every 23rd, but there's also, I think there also may be a weekly event, although maybe confusing it with Women in Black. But I'm glad some activists have not, you know, completely disappeared for the holidays. And the issue with this, I encourage you to come on down and take a look, be a part of this if you want. 11:30 a.m. starts at noon, again till 2 o'clock at Cooper and Pacific Avenue downtown. And you can read more about it on Santa Cruz Indie Media. But what I was saying before is that there has been a really kind of heartening resistance on Pacific Avenue, which I learned about by going to the Facebook page. You can actually find it on Santa Cruz Indie Media. I can't, unfortunately, in the studio find it because this particular computer is set up so it does not allow me to access the the side stories, which is really frustrating. But it is available. If you go to, you'll find a story about how a couple of artists, Joff and Alex Skelton, Joff Jones and Alex Skelton, successfully challenged, I think he's a sergeant now, maybe he's even gone higher, he's Lieutenant Eveleth. I sure as hell hope he hasn't gotten too high in the food chain of the police department. He stopped and demanded a juggler stop juggling and gave him a ticket for juggling on Pacific Avenue. Yeah, that's right, juggling on Pacific Avenue. Not necessarily, not juggling outside a box, the famous performance pins that people are required to be inside. And, you know, they have to be only for an hour, and then you have to move 100 feet away, and all these restrictions that, of course, make it very difficult for there to be any really vibrant street performing going on Pacific Avenue that isn't orchestrated by the Downtown Association or some other such group that has political power. But Alex stood up to the to Eveleth, Mark Eveleth, and told him, it's legal for them to be juggling. Why are you giving him a ticket? And he drew a crowd, began to raise this issue in a strong way. Alex himself, of course, has gotten ticketed and convicted of showing his artwork outside the sacred, they're no longer blue boxes, they're disc boxes on Pacific Avenue. And he perhaps has felt quite strongly the long claw of the police and the law as passed by the Santa Cruz City Council. And he then advised Tom Noddy about this. Tom Noddy is a bubble blower, professionally world famous, and also an activist locally who has been involved in fighting to restore, so far unsuccessfully, the street performers' voluntary guidelines, which were how street performers regulated themselves between 1980 and 2002 until city council busybodies and merchant apologists decided to move in and essentially crush that particular set of voluntary guidelines, instead set up a series of restrictive areas and a move-along law, and without any kind of justification of any criminal problems or even complaints. It was simply done, as far as I could see, as a sort of a tip of the hat to the merchant community, or a kiss on the ass of the merchant community. I don't know what you would call it. In any case, Tom Noddy, back in 2003, when this when they tried to ban juggling, even though the law that they passed, and as it was passed at City Council, did not authorize the banning of juggling. They had some other law about not hacky-sacking and not throwing things through the air. But the juggling was specifically exempted from that, and has been since 2003, when Tom Noddy went to jail for it, and when they didn't take any action to immediately change it. He contacted the Flying Karamazov brothers and other performers who announced they were going to come to town and do some performing up and down Pacific Avenue, which would make Santa Cruz a national laughingstock. And, of course, then the Matthews City Council quickly got together and an emergency measure clarified that it meant juggling is legal. But apparently a week ago they went after a juggler, that is, say, Mark Eveleth did. And because Alex Skelton stood up to that, informed Tom Noddy about it, Noddy wrote to Crone, new council member, who then wrote to the city manager, Martine Bernal, who then got to the vice police chief, or the deputy police chief, Martinez. And this is what I remember from reading Tom Noddy's email recently. He declared, "Oh no, there's been a misunderstanding here. This officer has been retrained. The ticket has been withdrawn." And that's nice. And I'm always happy when that happens. And now, of course, I'll give you my usual but, as I did in 2003 when Tom Noddy and others organized the street performers only in Santa Cruz Civic Auditorium performance, where I was also performing, doing my famous Why Swami Why, actually my little known Why Swami Why deal, which was a sort of a, you know, to be a Swami and kind of it was a comic act. But we had a little sort of indoor celebration of the fact that they had rolled back to where they said it was before this juggling ban, so there was no juggling ban. But, of course, the real problem with the downtown ordinances is they're intended to criminalize homeless people. And to get performers behind fighting that fight was something I could never get Tom Noddy to try to do. I still haven't been able to do that. And or, for that matter, for other performers. Although an organization that I worked with for about 5 years, SAFE, Society of Artistic Freedom and Expression, or Stop Foolish Enforcement, as it was called, did go out there and every Wednesday night violated the ordinances in the same way, in a certain sense, that the Freedom Sleepers violate the sleeping ban, trying to reclaim for performers the area, actually they were in front of the New Leaf Market area, which is now a forbidden zone. You cannot perform there. You cannot play a guitar there with an open guitar case or a little cup. You cannot peacefully panhandle. You cannot politically table there. All the large areas of the sidewalk have swept into a kind of a privatization where they're only available for commercial uses or transport to and from commercial areas. Things have deteriorated badly since then. But this was a victory, this juggling thing. I thank Tom for getting in touch and pressing this issue. I thank Alex particularly for standing up for this issue, Alex and Joff, for standing up for a fellow performer. And that's what I think is beginning to happen, perhaps somewhat instinctively, with performers on the streets of Santa Cruz, though I'm not hearing much about it myself. Nobody contacts me. But, you know, I can report about it, and I'm glad that I have that to report. I'm going to be coming back on Sunday with a report on that homeless memorial service, though there's not a hell of a lot to report about what went on there, except as I mentioned at the beginning of the broadcast, they attempted to oust me because I walked back in, and actually because I was looking for a map of their so-called low-impact or no-impact zone, which is the homeless lack of services center there, the Coral Street Poverty Pimpery, which now will only allow you to eat meals there if you are getting a pathway to housing. And admittedly, they've opened up, I guess, on a couple nights when it's been freezing to let a few people in for shelter, emergency shelter, in their dining area. I think they did that a couple times. That's what I think I've heard secondhand. But they've also, of course, set up iron gates, ID systems, security guards, and even before that, they had this so-called no-impact zone, which was a strip of area all the way, not just around the homeless lack of services center, but around the whole long block, all the way across the railroad tracks, all the way up the street perpendicular to Coral Street and parallel to Highway 9, so that if anybody had set up a tent or loitered there or assembled in a way that made any merchants apprehensive in any way, they could be penalized at the Homeless Lack of Services Center with denial of services. And I don't recollect the documentation I did at that time. This would be about 3 or 4 years ago, before the iron gates, the fences, the security guards, and the ID cards went up, about whether this happened a lot. But it was outrageous. Huff set up a table there on a couple of occasions protesting this behavior by the homeless lack of service center, this denial of the right of homeless people to use the public spaces. And the Homeless Lack of Services Center, of course, has done nothing, and it's just gotten worse and worse, similar to perhaps what Dan McMullen of Berkeley describes as the hub. There'll be more about that, and I'll be running through some of more of the There's one bit of good news. Deputy Chief of Police Steve Clark has closed out his 30-year career at the Santa Cruz Police Department and has moved on somewhere else. And there's a little article. There was an article in the Sentinel about a week ago on this issue. It doesn't mention... It mentions people who are praising him, or Annalisa Cube of Take Back